Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The Game, Aaron Rodgers, it looks like, is headed back to Green Bay. Adam Schefter reporting it, that they're coming to terms on some concessions that would allow Aaron to leave after this season. And I think it was Ian Rappaport tweeted it out, too, and said that Aaron decided to come back after thawing out over the weekend.
Mm.
Give me a freaking break.
Aaron over the weekend? This has been a month-long debacle.
Aaron had no leverage. Once the Jeopardy thing didn't explode, Aaron didn't have any leverage. Aaron had no leverage. And Adam Schefter is fully breaking it down right now on ESPN. Ian is grabbing that for us, and when we have that, we will have that for you. So we go through our expectations for the Titans, who, without controversy, are opening up training camp tomorrow, first practice on Wednesday. And I, again, break it down into games they will win, like the Texans, the Jags, the Jets, you know, the games they should win, toss-up games, games they should lose, like Buffalo, games they will lose, like Seattle or Kansas City or what have you. And I have two toss-up games at Indy. I could see that game going either way. At the Rams, I could see that game going either way. Caroline has no toss-up games, and Ian has six. Both Indianapolis games are toss-ups. Arizona at home as a toss-up. The Rams on the road as a toss-up. The Patriots on the road as a toss-up. And Pittsburgh on the road as a toss-up. And the reason I want to analyze those six games are because I feel like that's the middle of your schedule. Like the middle tier of your schedule. We know the Jets are bad. We know the Chiefs are good. We know that. But what about Arizona? Like, I don't like Arizona. I don't think they're very good. I mean, I don't trust Kyler. I don't, you know, I think JJ's old. Chandler Jones doesn't want to be there. I don't think Kingsbury can coach. DeAndre Hopkins may not even play because of the vaccine and doesn't want to get it and whatever. Like, okay. But I understand people that look at that and think that Arizona could beat the Titans. Most people rank Kyler Murray, shockingly, ahead of Ryan Tannehill. And then I look at Indy twice. And I said this at the top of the show. If we were doing the radio show in Indianapolis, would we say, oh, yeah, we think the Titans are way better than the Colts? Probably not. A lot of people don't think that the Titans are way better than the Colts. A lot of people worship the ground that Chris Ballard walks on, think that the offensive line in Indianapolis that doesn't have an answer at left tackle is one of the best in the league, and they just think Indy's great. There's the Rams. The Rams were a playoff team last year, made it to the second round with Jared Goff as the quarterback. Everybody's convinced Stafford is the greatest thing since sliced bread now that he's with the Rams. Probably a pretty good team. And then there's the Patriots and the Steelers, who have been really, really good for the last 20 years, even though I have my doubts there with both squads. Are we too cocky in looking at those games, Caroline, and say, oh, yeah, Titans, they'll take care of Arizona. They'll take care of the Patriots. They'll take care of Pittsburgh. Are we too cocky in that regard, and that the Titans really are closer to the middle of this group? And we can probably throw the 49ers in there, too.
Well, and that's exactly why I labeled them as should wins. When you look at these, you know, when you look at Arizona versus the Titans, or Pittsburgh versus the Titans, 49ers versus the Titans, I put should win because on paper, I lean toward the Titans roster. I lean toward their talent more than the other team. But there are also some outstanding circumstances. I'm not crazy high on Kyler Murray, but like he and D-Hop could have an outstanding connection this season and could be too much for the Titans defense to handle. Miami could be kind of a dark horse this year. I'm not super high on Miami this year, but we never know if Tua could have a breakout season. So that's why I labeled them as should wins. I don't think that we're being overly cocky. I think that we're probably going with our guts here and probably going with the smart decision, and that the Titans have probably a better roster, better names. But I am not willing to label them as would wins because you never know.
Well, you have to analyze this. Titans defense, until proven otherwise, freaking sucks.
Yes.
I mean, like, we got to be real. When we talk about the Titans having a good roster, that until this is how I'm approaching the defense. I expect that the defense will be better this year. I believe that somebody should lose their job. Somebody very high up should lose their job if the defense is not better this year. because that defense was so bad last year. But I will also say this when assessing the Titans. That defense stinks until they prove otherwise. Mm-hmm. Like, if they prove they're a middle-of-the-pack defense this year, then that maybe changes the entire game. Let's just say they're a middle-of-the-pack defense. They should beat Indianapolis twice. Indianapolis has too many flaws, too many issues, too many things that are unproven in order for me to think that a good Titans defense, knowing what they've got on offense, I mean, to me, that's insane. The idea that Indianapolis could compete with the Titans if the Titans have a decent defense. Same with Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Arizona, the coach, like, can we talk about the coach for a second at Arizona? The guy's never won a thing in his life. He has never won anything in his life. The one thing he was offensive coordinator at A&M when Johnny Manziel won the Heisman. Outside of that, he did nothing at Texas Tech. He's done nothing at Arizona. He was a college coordinator when they hired him to be head coach. This is Lane Kiffin to the Raiders, is what this is. And I can't take them seriously. They should beat Arizona. Now, look, Arizona's got some good names on their team, but I'm just saying.
They should beat Arizona, but I don't want to look past the Cardinals and say, all right, we do Seahawks.
I kind of do. I kind of do. Now, I don't think they're going to be the Seahawks week two, so I think it's going to be negligible. You win one NFC game, you lose one NFC game. Patriots and Steelers in the toss-up category. I am more confident Pittsburgh will stink this year than I am New England, but I don't think either team's going to be very good.
These road games, it's just tricky.
I feel like for you, Ian, when you came up with this list, you are worried about the typical Titan letdown.
I could just hear Floyd on the side of my shoulder going, everybody's 8-8 with a few inches of the ball here and there. You're 10-6 or 7-9 or whatever. So I just feel like there's just so many. And these indie games in particular, every year, are toss-ups. You never know if you're going to win on the road.
Sure.
Or are they going to win at home? You never know. Week one, also kind of a toss-up. See Ken Whisenhunt, at the Rams, at the Patriots, at Pittsburgh. I mean, at the Patriots and at Pittsburgh, even though their teams are not as high quality as we are used to, they are road games against seasoned NFL teams and coaches. And then at the Rams, a long trip, Sunday night football. Also going to be a toss-up. Honestly, that might even be in the should-lose category.
Sure.
And maybe one of the indie games could be in the should-win category, but I'd left him in the toss-up.
The one thing I feel like Ian's doing that I have to give him credit for, because this is a show where we try to keep it real, even though I want the Titans to win, but again, the whole mantra of what we do is trying to keep it real. I mean, I can see the Titans crapping their pants in one of these games. Like, I can see the Titans going to New England, screwing it up, and all of a sudden they lose, 21-20 because they missed a field goal at the end. And it's like, did they just lose to Mac Jones? Like, did they just lose to freaking Mac Jones? Because last year they lost to Cincinnati doing the same garbage. And in years past, they lost at Arizona and they lost at San Francisco. And I'm trying to think of the Vrabel first year. I'm sure they lost some stupid games. Like, where you look at it and you think, how on God's green earth did they go to Carolina and hand the ball to Derrick Henry twice in the first half and lose to that crappy, crappy Panthers team? They've done that over the years.
I also worry about the Saints as well.
Saints are tough. Saints are at home. So if Patriots were at home, I would feel like, write them in. Like, if the Patriot game was at home, I'd feel great about it.
Mm-hmm.
Saints are at home. I think the Saints suck.
The Saints are at home after a road trip to Los Angeles.
True. But I think the Saints are garbage.
KC, Indianapolis. I think this year the Saints are going to take a massive step back. I told you last week, I already put money on the over-under Saints winning fewer than 9 games. But I could see something weird happening with the Saints game. Sean Payton working some sort of magic, maybe throwing Taysom Hill in at quarterback. The Titans are maybe injured or banged up or just exhausted and losing a game that they should win.
Ian, do you think the Saints are trash this year?
It's hard for me to say trash because I do think they still have some good players And, you know, Michael Thomas, though, is going to miss some time. Who knows what they're really going to do at quarterback? They still have Kamara. I can't go trash. I do think they will be down from last year.
They'll take a step back, a big step back.
So, like, I don't want to compare them to the Bulls that won six titles in 8 years, and the 6 years they had Michael Jordan, they won all those titles. But the year after, when they tore it all down, and Pippen left, and Jordan left, and Rodman left, and Steve Kerr left, and they still had Tony Kukoc, and they still had Ron Harper. And I feel like that's what Alvin Kamara is. Like, he's still there. Mm-hmm. Thomas is hurt. Cook's gone.
But Mike Thomas could be back for this game.
He could be, but I just don't.
I'm projecting him to be back in October.
I think that guy is 25% worse without Drew Brees as his quarterback.
I would agree with that.
And so now he's injured, and he's got a little bit of an attitude problem, apparently. He's got a huge salary. He's probably going to have to justify that. And now he's having surgery, and I think that's a mess. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Again, your reaction on the Titans schedule, 615-737-1025. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Coming up on the other side, the Titans have made an addition onto their team. We will break that down, but I do, as I promised, Adam Schefter broke down the news surrounding Aaron Rodgers, the breaking news on ESPN just a couple of moments ago. Here's what Adam Schefter had to say.
Breaking news here on NFL Live. Adam Schefter just one day away from the date that Aaron Rodgers is supposed to report to camp. News coming down just moments ago. What more can you tell us?
Laura, the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers are on the verge of an agreement that's not done yet, that should be done shortly here, that will give Aaron Rodgers enough concessions to bring him back to Green Bay for at least one more season. Now, those concessions will have nothing to do with added money, which is yet further proof that Aaron Rodgers was not seeking the type of new contract that the Packers offered when they offered to make him the highest paid player in all of sports other than Lionel Messi, and he turned down that deal. This is about the way things are run. This is about structure. This is about creating a path for Aaron Rodgers to leave Green Bay potentially after this season. The Packers have voided the 2023 season on Aaron Rodgers' deal, which was the last year in his contract. And they've also agreed to promise to review his situation after this year. So if Aaron Rodgers still wants a trade after this year, he can get it. The two sides will sit down and review that after this season. So this agreement, if and when it is finalized, and Aaron Rodgers still is in California as we speak, awaiting final approval, if it gets done at that point in time, then Aaron Rodgers would be set up to play one more season in Green Bay. The Packers would get to hold off on keeping Jordan Love there. Now, for all the people who say this was obvious and this was expected all along, let me tell you that as of last week, Aaron Rodgers' plan was not to show up to training camp and to not play this season. And the talks intensified over the weekend to the point where they offered, the Packers did, enough in the way of concessions to get Aaron Rodgers to change his stance. The stance was no go. That was the plan. And the plan changed, as it sometimes can when training camp approaches. And now they are trying to finalize this agreement that will give Aaron Rodgers more control over his future, that will allow him some say there, that will allow him to come back to Green Bay, which is what the Packers wanted, which I think deep down inside with is what Aaron Rodgers was comfortable with, but not under the existing terms of the way it existed. And that's why these conversations went on all offseason, and that's why Aaron Rodgers' agent, Dave Dunn, was in Green Bay last weekend to try to come to an agreement that they could not figure out, and why the talks continued all week, and why late last week Rodgers thought he was not coming in, and over the last 24 hours, there was the shift that looks like it's going to result in this deal that will bring Aaron Rodgers probably back to Green Bay.
Boy, I'll tell you what, that's all costume play for me. That's all window dressing. To Shefty, to the people that said this was going to happen all along, Aaron was thinking about retiring last week, so you know that. Okay. I think Aaron probably made up in his mind a while ago he wasn't paying $40 million back. So, as I said, Aaron's going to make it look, they're going to announce something that makes it look like Aaron. My favorite was they promised to review after this year what to do with next year. Mm-hmm. Is that like how Texas A&M got promised when they joined the SEC that, hey, we'll let whatever school from that state veto another school from that state coming into the league. We promise that'll happen. And, oh, A&M doesn't want Texas in the conference. Sorry, Texas is in. That's what that sounds like to me. They're really doing nothing to give Aaron anything, except that Aaron can pump his chest up and say, they wanted to make me the highest paid player, and I said no. Congratulations, Aaron. You lose. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Whole Sonic Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 1025, the game. Stillman & Company, this Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Sunday, you will win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Friday morning at 9:45. Adam Schefter reporting, Aaron Rodgers is coming back to the Packers. We will break down in just a second the John Simon acquisition for the Titans. But I want to say this. I've just been looking around kind of after the bombshell, the Shefty 3-minute monologue Shefty had about how this is just big news in Green Bay that Green Bay is willing to void the 2023 year on Aaron Rodgers' contract. Wow. Other than that, no more money for Aaron. He could, according to Schefter, potentially leave after 2021. Keyword in that was potentially, which means he could potentially not leave. And they promised to review his standing with the team after this season. So that doesn't mean that they promised to trade him. That doesn't mean they promised to release him. But it means that they promised to review it. So all in all, the way Shefty sold it as compared to what it actually means is a night and day difference. Because you can couch it however you want to couch it. I mean, I heard the midday show today talking to David Poyle about one of these first round picks the Predators drafted. And I have no idea if this guy's any good. But Darren was talking about, he gets under your skin and it's, they need a guy like this. And it's, you know, the fans would love a guy like that. And they'd love a guy like Brad Marchand. And I'm like, Brad Marchand is better than any forward the Predators have drafted or developed in 22 years. Like, Brad Marchand's really good. Now, remember, they did use a first-round pick to acquire Ryan Hartman, and he got under your skin, but he just wasn't very good. They used a first-round pick on Austin Watson, and he'd fight people, but he wasn't very good. So you know how I feel about these, like, hockey draft picks. Like, if it ain't the number one pick who's playing tomorrow, do it on your own time. But it just depends on how you sell it. You know, how do you sell? So Schefter is like, I got bombshell information about all these concessions Green Bay has made to Rodgers. And so everybody's like, wow, 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 look at what that means. And, you know, Jason, and I don't know his last name, but Jason, he's with Over the Cap, which is, I think, a pretty decent cap tracking website.
Yeah.
He said, this is reportedly a concession by Green Bay to get people talking. Means very little if all they are doing is getting rid of 2023. And isn't that what we predicted the whole time? Like, isn't that what we said was going to happen the whole time? Was he's not going to pay back the $40 million. Green Bay is dug in. They're not going to trade him. So Green Bay is saying, all right, either come back or get lost. And so Aaron's, they're going to come to some agreement that'll make it look like Aaron won something so that Aaron can puff out his chest and say, see, I did it. But in reality, Green Bay's not really giving up anything. And that's exactly what happened. But it's all about how you sell it. This reminds me of the Tannehill contract restructuring, where Ian Rappaport said, oh, it's a simple restructure of Tannehill's contract, even though that's not what happened. And then I told Ian Rappaport, I don't think that's what happened. And then Ian Rappaport told us, or told me, you were right there when he told me, Ian Rappaport tells me, oh, no, I'm going to stick with what I tweeted out. And then 2 hours later, Ian Rappaport goes, oh, I just want to update the story a little bit so it's not actually a simple restructure. What it did was added to what? Oh, yeah, so you were wrong. But Ian Rappaport's not going to sell it as if he were wrong. And so that's what this is. Is this is all bullcrap. If anybody tells you that Aaron Rodgers won anything, they're lying to you. He didn't. He didn't get anything. At the end of the day, Aaron wasn't going to be willing to not play and pay back $40 million. Was Aaron willing to retire? Maybe. Maybe Aaron was willing to retire. I don't know if he actually was willing to not play football ever again. I'm not sure he loves the game like these other guys love it. Like, I'm not sure he loves the game like Brady loves it.
I think he would have been totally content never putting a jersey on again.
If he didn't have to pay back $40 million, do you think Aaron Rodgers is retiring?
Probably.
I agree. Because Aaron is so prideful and so stubborn that he won't listen to anybody else. So the only thing that's keeping him is the $40 million. Now, I think that locker room's a mess. Oh, and I saw Schefter tweeted out that now that Aaron Rodgers is coming back, Devontae Adams is willing to discuss a contract extension with Green Bay.
Well, I think that was the case from the very beginning. I mean, Devontae Adams even said that. He said, if, you know, if that's my guy, I would have a really tough time playing not with my guy.
I think this is one of those scenarios where Devontae Adams was just playing along. Like, Devontae Adams was willing to sign. Devontae Adams was going to come to camp. Devontae Adams was. But hey, you know, while Aaron's throwing his temper tantrum, I'm going to go, you know, coddle Aaron, because that's what you got to coddle Aaron. Mm-hmm. You can't keep it real with Aaron. I'm going to go coddle Aaron, and I'm going to go pretend like I'm on his side against the man, just like Matt LaFleur, who has stayed out of this because he's the coach. You know, Rodgers' anger has been towards Gutekunst, the general manager, and LaFleur has stayed so far out of this because he knows, hey, you know, I got to have Aaron on my side. Devontae Adams knows I got to have Aaron on my side. So I think this is all costume play. And Schefter knows it, but Schefter is playing his part in this, which is, you know, let me pretend this is a big deal. And I'm going to get on TV and do some acting and act like it's a big deal. But Schefter's smarter than that. He knows this is all bullcrap. Like, he knows this is all ridiculous. But if he doesn't do that, then Aaron's going to continue his little pity party. And Green Bay just wants the pity party to be over. Green Bay wants Aaron to feel like he won. But Aaron's not going to feel like he won unless Aaron sees the reaction of people saying, wow, Aaron won. That's what Aaron wants.
Which is just so crazy to me.
It's so childish.
That you can make that much money and you could be that good at what you do and you're so worried about what people are saying about you.
I'm going to put it to you like this. I'm not in Aaron Rodgers' family. So, and I'm not on the Green Bay Packers and I don't run it. So I'm not there every day. But I think I know Aaron's family well enough to tell you that if you've got problems with those people that you can't fix, you are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're a quarterback in the NFL and the other team takes a guy in the first round and you go out and have the career season, which was the whole reason they picked that guy in the first place, they didn't draft Jordan Love thinking that Jordan Love was going to lead them to the Super Bowl in 2021. And I'd be surprised if they really thought in their hearts that Jordan Love was going to lead them to the Super Bowl in 2025. They drafted Jordan Love to stick a rod up Aaron's rear end to get him to play better. And it worked because he won the league MVP. That's why they did it. So if you're that childish that that's what it takes, I think we're going to look back at Aaron's career. And he won that one Super Bowl early. But we're going to look back at a career where he won one Super Bowl, and it's going to be disheartening thinking that he could have won more. And I think for a lot of the time, a lot of people were on his side when it came to Mike McCarthy, when it came to some of the things Green Bay was doing. I don't think people are on his side anymore. I think they look at him like a spoiled, immature child. He's got all the money in the world. He's one of the most famous athletes. And yet, this is just me. He seems to be incredibly unhappy. And I'm just not sure that there's anybody that can give him what he truly wants. And I don't know what this is. I mean, I have both on the air and off the air, I've, you know, talked about how these guys like Michael Jordan and Tom Brady and how these guys motivate themselves. I think one of Michael Jordan's greatest talents, and you would know that Michael Jordan has a lot of great talents, one of his greatest talents is his ability to metabolize anger and turn it into greatness. You know, George Carl cannot acknowledge him at a restaurant, and Jordan metabolizes that into, I'm going to rip his rear end in these NBA finals. And just takes it so personally. Carl Malone named MVP. I'm going to take that personally. Charles Barkley, a 93, named MVP. I'm going to take it personally. And he metabolizes that anger into motivation, and he just does incredible things. It's just very, that's what Michael Jordan does. Brady, same way. I'm not sure that Rodgers metabolizes his anger into results like those guys do. Like, I think that there's a very fine line where that's an issue. And I think for Aaron, he does metabolize that, and it has worked out into some results, but that ultimately the pettiness gets a hold of Aaron at the end of the day, whereas it doesn't with those two guys. And I think that's the big difference. Is I just think Aaron is petty, and he just can't let little stuff go. And I get it. Like, if they drafted my radio replacement, I wouldn't love it. I would go out to show that, hey, I'm the best afternoon show host there is. Like, I would do that. But at the end of the day, like, if I'm getting paid a lot of money, I'm getting paid a lot of money. And I got to know that I'm getting paid all this money to do this. And I'm not sure Aaron was there on that.
And we know how Devontae Adams feels about it because he came out and said, I'm not going to sign a contract extension quite yet because I'm a little bit worried about not playing with Aaron Rodgers. But with every other guy in the locker room, do you think this makes a negative impact?
So no, because I think they know what Aaron is. Like, I think they know. Like,
they knew before this whole situation.
I think Devontae Adams was kissing the rings.
Probably.
I think it was, I'm going to kiss the rings, and then this way when Aaron shows back up, he's still going to throw me the ball every play. You know, like, I think that's, because I'll say this. If Devontae had come out and said, hey, I'm a Green Bay Packer, and whatever the Green Bay Packers decide to do, that's what I'm going to.
Zero targets
above
a game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't care if you're the best wide receiver in the league. You are not getting the ball once.
And those guys know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they understand Aaron's pettiness. All right, we'll get to the John Simon acquisition next, and I'm sure the text line is a poppin'. We'll get to that next as well. 615-737-1025, Stillman & Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
What's his role? Where do you think he fits into this roster, or does he?
I think he'll be in the back end of the rotation. If I'm not mistaken, I have to go back and look. I believe I had Skipper making the 53-man. I actually like Skipper. You know, he's a heavy hat. He's a guy that you know, I saw do some things in practice that were impressive to me. But Simon's a veteran, right? And he's a guy that obviously has the Patriot ties. But, you know, Mike Vrabel coached him back at Ohio State, so you have that. There's a familiarity there. And I think you can never have too many veterans, you know, especially from a pass-rushing side of things. They don't know exactly. I mean, I know they believe that everything is going to work out with Rashad Weaver, but you never know if something could go left. From that side of things, you need to have depth there. So I don't think that it's, you know, a really huge, significant signing, but It's a definite one, if you ask me.
There you go. That was TD on Darren Donick and Chase earlier today talking about the addition of John Simon. Here's the thing. A couple of years ago, Simon was a legit player. You know, a legit money guy and a legit, you know. I remember a couple of years ago intercepting Marcus Mariota in a Monday Night Football game and running it back. I believe he got his career started in Houston, then went to Indianapolis, got his big money. Then left Indianapolis, went to the Patriots, and here's what I'll say about John Simon. I think he's a minimum salary guy, so no money there. Nothing you have to worry about. Vrabel knows him. He's a Vrabel guy, played at Ohio State. I believe Vrabel was there with him at the Texans. Mm-hmm. He's a Patriot guy because he played there. So he's a no-nonsense veteran that has experience at outside linebacker. Works for me. I mean, I just, what they can't do is they can't go into games this year where it's Harold Landry, Bud Dupree, and Derek Roberson are the only three outside linebackers that are up. Because I think they need to rotate. The key to that defense, I believe, is getting a pass rush. I think that's the key to almost any defense in the NFL. And I think what you got to do is keep your guys fresh. Simmons can't play the whole game. Autry can't play the whole game. Landry can't play the whole game. Coming off of an ACL, Dupree can't play the whole game. So I think they need to rotate bodies in and out. I think Simon is better than Skipper. He's accomplished more in his NFL career. I'd like to see one guy kind of break out there as the third guy. I think they probably hope it's Rashad Weaver. He's got his own issues. But I can live with, I'm not in love with, but I can live with a rotation of John Simon in there with Bud Dupree starting, Harold Landry starting, Derek Roberson backs up one guy, Rashad Weaver backs up the other guy, and Simon goes in there as well, and Simon's going to play special teams. So the familiarity with Vrabel, I think that's probably a positive. The guy's got a nice little career in the past. He's probably not going to be, you know, a big-time sacker, but he has shown in the past he can get to the quarterback. He's a decent football player. I think it's a good minimum salary signing, which is what I think this is, and I think it'll be fine. But again, nothing earth-shattering.
Right. I'm not going to turn around and say, oh, well, the Titans are going to win the Super Bowl now. But whenever we were talking about any sort of acquisitions that the Titans could make pre-training camp, I said sure. It has got to be on defense, preferably pass rush. I thought maybe corner, just depending on Caleb Farley's health. But especially given the news that Bud Dupree will be on the PUP list, I said pass rush is absolutely necessary. Titans didn't need another $15 million pass rush. They didn't need some sort of big-time guy. I've seen a lot of people talk about
Although they could use that.
I mean, I'm not...
They could use that.
I wouldn't hate it.
And you were about to bring up Chandler Jones, and I'll say this.
Yes, I was going to bring up Chandler Jones.
If I had my pick between Julio Jones or Chandler Jones, before they acquired Julio Jones, I'd take Chandler Jones.
I think that's a higher quality position, and especially one that the Titans could use right now. But I think any sort of pass rush, especially depth when you have so much injury and you have other guys at that position that are more of plug and plays and not every single snap kind of guys, it's a good acquisition. I think it's good. I feel a little bit better about the Titans at pass rush. I'm not going to turn around and say the Titans have one of the best defenses in the league now, but you feel better about it.
Now, here's what worries me. This was kind of a little under-the-radar news item. Caleb Farley placed on the NFI list, non-football injury. Mm-hmm. Non-football injury is when you get hurt training or you get hurt doing something that's not football-related. You go off on the ATV and you crash it and you break your shoulder. Mm-hmm. NFI, you don't get paid. Why is Farley on the NFI? If it's his back that he injured before the draft, and I don't know the specifics about how the CBA works, but shouldn't the Titans be responsible for that? Like, if his back injury is what's keeping him from being able to perform, and he injured his back before the Titans drafted him, shouldn't the Titans be on the hook for that? Like, I think they should be. I think, now again, I don't know the specifics. Right. I mean, shouldn't they be? Shouldn't he be? I worry there's something else in there. Like, I'm worried that Farley's hurt with something else, and nobody's talking about it.
But that's the confusing thing, is everything I've heard is Caleb Farley's good to go. Caleb Farley could be in training camp. We expect Caleb Farley week one. So back to your point, what else is it? Do you think it's just like a hamstring tweak that he got training?
I have no idea.
There is a note here from Jim Wyatt's article. It says the NFI covers injuries sustained during a player's final college football season.
Okay. So that would make sense.
I think it doesn't feel fair
because the Titans knew exactly what was wrong with Caleb Farley when they drafted him. So it's not like he shouldn't get paid for that. But, but that makes sense.
Like
that checks out.
The Titans should. And again, this is an issue with the rule, not so much the situation.
Right.
But like the Titans should. It's like the Dez Bryant catch. Like, your issue's with the rule. Your issue isn't with that play. Your issue's with the rule. My issue here is with the rule that, like, if you're going to draft an injured guy, you should have to pay him.
Yes.
Like, he's injured.
But as annoying as that rule is, I am a little bit relieved in that we can almost assume that that's what it is. It's the back. It's not some sort of weird ankle thing when he fell off the curb and whatever it is, that it's exactly what we know.
So, and Mike Vrabel will be asked about it tomorrow. I'm sure he will, as we are used to Vrabel doing, say nothing. 615-737-1025. So throw the John Simon news on the table. Throw the Titans defense news on the table. We're doing Titans expectations today. So we got the Aaron Rodgers news on the table. We'll hit your thoughts on it next. 615-737-1025. Text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll go right to it next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 1025, the game delivered by TriStar Moving and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Somebody texted me about Caleb Farley and said being placed on the NFI list for the Titans. Somebody texted me and said, how long does this issue get to be an issue until Chris Sanders was right? Remember at the draft, on draft night, Chris Sanders just threw a fit when they picked Caleb Farley. Said it was a terrible pick, which is very un-Chris Sanders-like. And, you know, with Farley, they said, oh, no, we feel like he'll be fine, he'll be fine. Didn't practice in the OTAs because they wanted to be cautious with it. But, hey, he should be ready for training camp, and now he's on the NFI list. And Joe Retro texted me and said the NFI is any injury that is sustained not in an NFL practice or an NFL game. I would never work out. Like, if I signed a big contract, I would never work out not at the team facility. Like, I would never do it. I would never go on, like, vacation and work out in the hotel gym. If I know that if I'm working out at the hotel gym and I tear something or hurt something,
that you wouldn't get paid.
Right.
Yeah.
Screw you. Like, Jared came in out of shape this offseason. Yeah. You know why Jared came in out of shape this offseason? Because the only thing I trust doing is the little recumbent bike. Like, that's it. But so, anywho, Farley's on the NFI, and somebody asked me, how long until Chris Sanders becomes right on this? Like, if Farley starts missing games, is Chris Sanders right? If we look back at the first season and we say, well, you know, he never really fully recovered from the back, so let's wait till year two, is Chris Sanders right? Like, when does Chris Sanders become right?
I think if it becomes, like, if he misses a game or two, I think I kind of expected that from Caleb Farley, unfortunately, but I think if it becomes, like, a lingering issue throughout the entire season, throughout his entire career, then yeah, Chris Sanders is right.
If Caleb Farley's not starting in the middle of the season, it's a problem.
Yes.
I mean, like, there's the... I think it was TD was talking about, you know, what do they do between Farley and Fulton? Because we know Jenkins is going to start at one position. Mm-hmm. So then there's Farley and Fulton with the idea that Elijah Molden's going to be on the slot. I don't expect Caleb Farley, but the way everybody talks to me about Caleb Farley, I mean, I think they're getting, sounds to me like they're getting Deion Sanders if he didn't have a back injury. So if he's not playing ahead of Fulton, I got a problem with that. Let's go to your phones. As promised, everything's on the table. Throw Farley on the table as well if you want to get in on that. 615-737-1025. Caroline, what do we have in the text line?
Chip from Mount Juliet texts in reference to Adam Schefter's breaking news about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers possibly coming to concessions and him rejoining the Packers this season. Chip says he is a Packer fan, but the Packers could end up losing on this one. One, Rodgers could get hurt, which is always a risk that's there. And two, Rodgers causes rift in the locker room. He is a cancer.
Ding, ding, ding. I do not consider the Packers a Super Bowl contender this year because I think Aaron has selfishly taken away the focus of the organization, and that focus will not go away. This is about him. We talk about Michael Jordan. We talked about Tom Brady and kind of the difference. Aaron doesn't care about winning the championship. I am convinced of it. Michael Jordan cared about one thing. It's winning the championship. Tom Brady cared about one thing. It's winning the championship. Aaron cares about one thing. Aaron. And so I look at this and I think to myself, there are always guys like this. And this is why Scottie Pippen, with all due respect to Scottie, will never be looked at in the same breath as any of those guys. Even though Scottie won all of these titles, and Michael probably couldn't have won the titles without Scottie, and it's because Scottie took himself out of the game. Because Scottie put himself ahead of the team. And you will never be considered the kind of player that you're capable of being considered if you live your life like that. Michael Jordan went from Doug Collins giving him the ball on every play to the triangle offense, in which they convinced him, hey, you need to give the ball to Bill Cartwright more. Hey, you need to give the ball to Horace Grant more. In their last game, game five, when they beat the Lakers to win their first championship, if you watch The Last Dance, Phil Jackson, in a close game, in between the third and the fourth quarter, said, John Paxson is open. Get Paxson the ball. Michael turns around, passes to Paxson, swish. Passes to Paxson, swish. John Paxson hit, I think, 5 shots in that fourth quarter. Because Michael Jordan knows what he's doing. Brady, all he ever does is pump his guys up. Look at Tom Brady's Instagram after they win a game. And he's tagging every offensive lineman. And it shows him hugging some random guy you've never heard of. And he's always tagging his guys and his boys and his... I don't follow Aaron on Instagram. But how often does Aaron pump up his own guys?
I have no idea, but I cannot expect that it's very much.
Aaron's a bad teammate. Aaron does not care about anybody else. And that's why when he retires with one Super Bowl, we'll never consider him with the greats of the greats. He'll never be there in that discussion with Tom Brady. He'll never be in the discussion of the way people feel about Peyton Manning. He will never be there because he's a bad teammate. What's next?
So in reference to Caleb Farley being on the NFI list, William texts in and says, if Farley misses multiple games this year due to his back injury, J-Rob has to go.
So that's not going to happen, though I understand the the sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing about Robinson, and this is how I feel about kind of like general managering in general. Like, there's a lot of risks involved, and I understand that you take risks. I take risks in my career. Granted, they're not the same. But I take risks in my career that I'm willing to get fired over. Like, I'm willing to hire you, and I'm willing to get fired over that. Now, I didn't do the hiring. I mean, I'm not your supervisor, but, I mean, like, when we added you to the show, as opposed to, say, somebody who probably had a little bit less talent, probably didn't have the same work ethic you have, but maybe had a bigger name or maybe had more experience or whatever, I was not willing to get fired. I was not willing to have this show go down on that. But I was willing when I met you and we interviewed you and went through. I'm willing to risk my show that we built up, Floyd, Ian, and I built up for 5 years. I'm willing to risk it.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Life's about making those kind of gambles. The thing I like about Robinson, unlike maybe some other general managers in this city, is that Robinson's willing to gamble. And if the gamble doesn't work out, I know John Robinson knows he's getting fired. Like, I know he knows that if he gambles on Farley after busting on Wilson, if he gambles on Farley and it doesn't work, if all the gambles this year don't work, Dupree coming off of the knee injury, Julio after the age of 30, Farley with the back injury, if those things don't work, releasing Dennis Kelly, if those things don't work, he knows he's getting fired. Sometimes I think coaches and general managers will talk a big game about if our things don't work out, then, you know, we get fired. But then when the things don't work out, all it is like a lecture to you on how could it possibly be my fault? How could I possibly have known? That's what David Poyle's doing now. He makes all these big gambles on Johansson and Duchesne and Ellis and Arvidsson, and none of them have worked, and John Hines, and none of them have worked. And now David is looking at all of us like, well, Jared, I've tried, but not willing to take the responsibility of, hey, if I'm going to get fired. I think Robinson realizes that. Now, if Farley doesn't work out, I don't think that means Robinson's going to get fired, nor do I think that means that Robinson should get fired. But I think it means that you won't have a very good team in a couple of years if it's not working out here with Farley, and it didn't work out last year with Wilson, and you traded next year second. I mean, you can't be good if you can't draft. And so I ultimately think it probably would hurt Robinson, but the idea of like the direct, oh, you messed up last year, now you've messed up this year, you got to go, I don't believe in that. He's been the general manager for 5 years. They've had 5 winning seasons. They were the worst team in the league when he took over. Robinson's doing an okay job.
And I think especially to the potential upside, because if he would have drafted this no-name guy who was also hurt and people weren't very high on him and people were very confused why the Titans drafted him, then I would understand, okay, maybe a little bit tougher on John Robinson. But let's not forget that multiple people, multiple insiders, multiple people that know the game and know Caleb Farley have said that he was the best corner in this year's draft. It would have gone much higher.
So here's what I feel about that. Because remember, all these other executives told The Athletic, like, we wouldn't touch that back. You know, they said, we saw the medical. We're not touching it.
Yes.
You got friends that are investing in cryptocurrency?
Yes.
And I said this when they drafted him. Because I got a buddy who is Mr. Bitcoin. Like, legitimately Mr. Bitcoin. And I'm not a cryptocurrency guy. I got a little bit of it, but, like, I don't really, you know, whatever. I'm a stock market guy. I believe in the stock market. I believe in the stocks I buy, that kind of thing. This feels kind of like a crypto gamble. Like, I'm not willing to put my life savings into Bitcoin or Ethereum or Dogecoin or Litecoin.
I had a little bit of Doge.
I'm not willing to put my life savings into that. The Titans are putting their life savings into this, into these injured players.
High risk, high reward.
They are doing that. But that doesn't, to me, absolve you of any blame if it doesn't work out.
Correct.
I mean, this is what I believe about gambling in general. If you're willing to lose, then make the gamble. And scared money does not make money. So I get it. But at the end of the day, like, I do believe that our actions have consequences. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Again, we've got the drama with Aaron Rodgers. We've got more drama with Deshaun Watson. Headlines with Caroline. We'll hit all of those coming up next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we are streaming on the Game Nashville app.